You're listening to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast, and we are here to break down Lost Season 4. Your Lost hosts have reassembled. I'm Shruti.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Priya.
And Sawyer has jumped off the helicopter. Jin has not jumped into the helicopter. We're here to break it all down, but I mean... this is the most frustrating part for me, is that I didn't get to check in with y'all midway through the season. So I would love to just know, what were your thoughts while watching the season? Did you have fun figuring out who the Oceanic Six would be and tracking out how they'll all get together? Or did you hate the season completely and you're like, I can't believe Shruti said this was her favorite season. How'd you feel?
I really enjoyed it. It was definitely, for me, a very disjointed viewing experience because, as you know, I get very overzealous at the start. And with this being a shortened season, I really had to reel it in and took a bit of a break between like the first 10 episodes and then the last four. I had a little mid-season break.
Yeah, Mike's break was after The Shape of Things to Come, after Alex was shot.
Yes.
I made Mike,
oh my God,
take a hard stop.
Insanity. But that being said, I did really enjoy it, and it allowed me, my break allowed me to get into some other new television shows that are out right now.
What have
now,
you been watching?
Been good.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
True Detective. Okay. True Detective Night Country. I love True Detective.
I love Jodie Foster.
And I love Jodie Foster. Although, in this is a quick sidebar, but I was like, oh my God, there's one episode left of True Detective. It's just like a 6-episode season. And then I started thinking, I was like, what would happen if Lost was made today? How many episodes per, because they
it would be 10 episodes and it would be called Yellow Jackets.
Yeah. I haven't seen Yellow Jackets, but it would be 10 episodes.
Did you see
episodes.
Society of the Snow?
The movie?
I don't I can't do eating people.
Just referencing other plane crash movies. But anyway, let's get back to Lost.
Yeah. But I was like, Lost would be so different if it was a show that was 8 or 10 episodes per season. And I think we even feel a little bit of that in season 4 being a truncated season compared to the 22, 23 episode seasons that we're accustomed to, where we have slower episodes, we have more character development.
It's, you have them fixing up the VW van.
Yeah, we're just hanging around the island. And it was like, this season is like wall-to-wall craziness, like constantly moving, constantly changing. You know, and it's just like, you barely have time to think before the next like twist or surprise hits you. And I think in some ways that's good. And in some ways, it's unfortunate because the writing can then get a little choppy, right? But it does make for good entertainment. And I liked and appreciated how we had a lot of characters sort of cycling back in this season. We see Michael again. We see Walt again. And there's others I'm forgetting. But it really...
Christian Shepherd,
yes. Yes, I called that. I called that, by the way. It's my mind is the inner machinations of my mind are an enigma, to quote Patrick Starr. This season was something.
I think that the season started out strong and ended strong. Mm-hmm. And in the middle, there were some struggles. And I think trying to understand what everyone's character is doing in the flash forward scenes was not always so effective, I think, for me. But what I liked about the season actually is that the mysteries from start to finish, like Mike said, I think accelerated through, and you got really a beginning, a middle, and an end to the season, I thought. And actually there was a point towards the end of the season finale where I was like, there is a way in which this could end the show, and I feel like it could feel good. And I think some of that came from like the closure of getting the Oceanic Six together, getting them on the helicopter, that final Sawyer jump where like that last piece clicks into place and you're like, oh yeah, that's what happens. I'm really, really pissed at Jin. Like the dude should have run faster, honestly. And he could have jumped into the water, but we can.
And I will say too, I think another thing that kind of worked well about this season, because I feel like the conflict between our losties and the others, it wasn't necessarily getting stale, but I think naturally that conflict was starting to run its course. So it worked well, I think, to introduce this new group, the crew from this ship in their various roles. Some of them were more sympathetic to our losties than others. Shout out Frank Lapidus. But, Frank. You know, that added an interesting element, almost to the point where the losties and the others now, they're not kumbaya, but they're almost like, there's a little bit of like, oh, we see each other here. Like we're kind of in this together, but we still don't like you.
I think that is one of the most impressive feats of Lost, is having so many different players on so many murky, like it's not team A versus team B. Mm-hmm. There's like team A.5 that agrees with part of team A, but kind of is leaning towards team B.
And even our losties are splitting up, right? You're either a Jack or you're
Locke. And then there's team C, and you have no idea what team C's motivations even are. Like, do they want to blow up the island or do they want to turn it into a theme park? I have no idea. Team C stands for Charles Widmore.
I do think that this collection of new characters, the freighter people, had some of the most likable new characters since my main gal, Juliet. Like, I think not since Juliet have I felt as strongly as I have for Dan Faraday.
Oh!
Who is not a perfect person. He's not, but I just adore him and agree. Frank Lapidus is great. Even towards the end, you start getting into some Miles action. You start feeling for Charlotte a little bit. They're interesting, but they're very fundamentally likable in a way that a lot of the new characters are on purpose not.
Yeah, let's check in with our freighter crew, starting with Breathe's favorite, Dan Faraday. I think it's
wrong choice, really interesting, by the way.
Oh, come my on. Goodness. This is another thing where he is so
Charlie, it hurts.
Oh my. I could not
Charlie
more.
Just
this
because
is,
he has a
Mike, this
goatee?
Is your, no. No. This is your straight man showing. This is like how you didn't realize Sawyer was attractive
He's not.
Until like three.
No, I never
no,
I don't I still
two.
Don't think he is.
Okay, then I think you don't.
No, I just
get
became
opinion,
I just became a fan of his. No. He is like Daniel Faraday is just like so he gives me the ick with like Charlie did with Claire. He gives the ick with Charlotte, and I'm like, he's just like this dweeby little guy, and he can't ever fucking like pick a lane, whether he's like telling the truth or like how much, you know, he's a little whiny.
I love him. I think his heart is so deeply in the right place. You can tell that he cares about people. He wants to do the right thing. He doesn't always know what the right thing is. He knows, I think his brain knows a lot more than he's able to freely show, and that gets him into a lot of trouble. And I just like how like all his emotion is written on his face at all times. And he is an integral part of The Constant, which is an iconic episode of television.
What do you think about Desmond being Daniel's constant, the reveal we get at the end of that episode? What do you think that means?
That hasn't quite worked for me yet. I think, yet, correct. I imagine that there's going to be more payoff. I think it's interesting that Daniel Faraday right now is the character that understands the time properties of the island better than anyone else, as far as I can tell. Maybe even Ben. Like, we know that Ben obviously has a deep understanding of a lot of the magical properties of the island, but I haven't heard him talk about or explain time in as clear a way as Dan Faraday seems to understand. And so that piece is cool, that he really understands.
Do you
understands
just like him because he
is.
Has answers?
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's not the worst reason to like someone. But he understands the time thing. He knows that he's seen Desmond in the past and on the island. The one piece that doesn't really work, I think, as a clincher to that episode is that we've spent 30 minutes, 45 minutes really feeling the emotional weight of the constant and Penny being Desmond's constant. And then to have Desmond be Daniel Faraday's constant doesn't quite carry the same amount of fire.
Yeah. And for me, it really goes, you know, all the way back to, and I don't know the exact episode in the name of it. You know, I don't do well with that thing, that type of thing. I really don't. But that being said, it goes back to, you know, the episode that we had, the deep dive on Desmond in the flashbacks, and when he meets the old lady in the jewelry store. And I remember then, like, that
flashes before your eyes,
and that didn't totally work for me as well. It's just like, that is, to this point, I think, still a little rough around the edges. It's still too ambiguous. It's just totally not working for me in terms of this whole difference in time, and like how Desmond is seeing the future. And it's just a little wonky to me. But I will say, I am interested to see where they go now with how season 4 left off and the island disappearing and Ben explaining how they can time travel. And I guess it sort of is playing into the whole magnetic thing of it all. But it's not the most compelling part of the show, just because I like the tangible stuff, right? And I do appreciate the mystery of the show and how certain things are accounted for, but sometimes it just gets a little far away from it.
Let's deep dive into the continent while we're in this area. I just want to check in with y'all, because I don't know, Mike, how much prior context you had about the continent going into watching the episode, but both me and Priya were aware upon our first viewing that this is known as not only one of the best episodes of Lost of all time, but one of the best episodes of television of all time. On the Ringer's website, they put out, it was like while I was in high school, I don't remember what year, but they put out, or sorry, while I was in college, so between 2015 and 2019, they put out an article about the best 100 episodes of television in the 21st century, and The Constant was number one. So very high hype going into it. I think it lived up to the hype. I think even beyond just the final scene of Desmond and Penny talking to each other and making you sob, its whole episode is nonstop thrills. The way they like exposit what could potentially happen to Desmond through Minkowski getting all of these symptoms and then eventually dying is like really stressful, because you don't want Desmond to die. Like, the ticking clock they put on it, the fact that Saeed is by his side the whole time, he's very good. I loved it. Britha, I want to hear your thoughts, but I just am curious to go to Mike, as somebody who didn't have this prior setup going into the episode. Did you feel like, damn, I just watched a great episode of television after you finished it, or it was just another episode of Lost to you?
Somewhere in between, right? Like, it definitely, I think, was up to that point the most exciting episode of season 4. I wouldn't say to me it was like the most exciting and best episode of Lost I've ever seen, or any show of that matter. You know, like, off the top of my head, like, if you could ask me, like, what are some of the best episodes of television I've ever seen, like, I could tell you episodes from other shows. To me, The Constant probably wouldn't be
safe room on Succession
list. I haven't seen Succession. Sorry.
Well, then you haven't seen the best episode of television.
Okay, sure. regardless. Yeah, no, I mean, it was good. It was great. It was definitely, again, like I said, the most exciting part of season 4. But it wasn't like mind blown, drop everything, call Shruti and be like, what the fuck did I just watch? But it was good.
I had definitely in my mind going into Lost knew that The Constant was supposed to be one of the best episodes of television of all time, and that Charlie would put his hand up and said, not Penny's boat. And in my head, I had conflated the two and they thought they were the same thing. So after we saw Charlie in Through the Looking Glass, we saw that moment. I then had no idea what The Constant was going to be about. So that was kind of cool. I think it's incredibly successful. I think it helps for sure that I was watching it a lot more carefully and probably with a little bit more just openness to being emotionally moved, because I knew that it was supposed to be this great episode of television. I think what makes it so successful is that it is so singularly focused on what's happening on that boat and really what's happening with these three people on the boat, Minkowski, Hugo from Succession, Desmond and Saeed.
Not to be confused with Hurley.
And then also Penny. And I think Lost is so huge and wide ranging, and there's so many different people and so many different types of stories that they're telling, that very rarely do we get such a focused episode. And I think that's part of what made it work and what makes it so impactful, is that most other episodes have very successful emotional moments, but then also some tangents, also some places that don't work quite as well for me, some cheesy lines. And this, I think, was just edited down to a single kernel that worked really well.
To the point of not even having a previously on. It just starts.
Right.
Like, when I watched The Constant for the first time, I was like, wait, did I skip something? Like, and then I was like, oh, no, previously on. I, like, clued me into it being something special. Mike, to your point of, like, didn't call Shruti immediately to be like, what the hell did I just watch? I feel like that's kind of what makes The Constant even more special. It's like, there's no plot twist in this episode. There's no big reveal in this episode. It's all about these two characters just trying to find each other, and it does that so well. I mean, it's helpful that Desmond and Penny are just, like, very charismatic actors that you want to root for, but I think...
Yeah, I do love their story, and I'm very glad they are reunited at the end of season four. And I honestly think part of what plays into it, right, is it's totally different nowadays watching a show streaming versus watching it when it's on air and watching it week by week and waiting for the next episode, right? Because, like, sometimes I'll go in these little spurts of, like, oh, I'm going to binge two or three episodes in a row, or I'm going to watch a few episodes a week. And I think when that happens, they start to blend together a little bit. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, my little, like, 2 to 3 week break halfway through this season is, like, when I picked up the remainder of season four, like, yes, there were the previously on Lost, and I got my little catch up before the episodes. But even, like, in the finale, when Locke sees Minkowski, right?
Not Minkowski. Minkowski's dead.
Kikini.
No. Kimi. No. I'm talking about Locke when he has his vision.
Oh, Horace? In Cabin Fever? And not before you're who, what's the vision? Describe the vision to me.
Yeah, the guy building the cabin.
That's Horace. Horace. Not
Ben's
Horace.
Dad. Horace Workman? No. Oh, that's Roger Workman.
Ben's dad is Roger.
Sorry. Who's Horace?
Horace
again?
Is somebody we haven't met him before.
Oh, okay. Well, that's.
But he's a member of the Dharma. Oh. All you need to know, he's a member of the Dharma Initiative.
Minkowski's the guy on the boat who bleeds to death out of his nose.
Yes. Okay. Why did they, in my mind, they look the same?
They both look weirdly evil.
There's a lot of...
They have evil...
There's a lot of, like, middle-aged, balding white men who, like, should be in Office Space, but are, like,
okay.
Lost instead.
Because... Okay, yeah, they're not the same person.
Mike, because don't go, are you Googling?
No, because
he literally had to fact-check that what I said was wrong.
Are you... You're not allowed to Google things, Michael.
No. I'm looking up their name, like, images of them, because...
What if you see Horace dies, biggest character introduced in season four, becomes the biggest character of Lost season five, dies in the most mind-blowing death you could ever
imagine?
What if you saw that?
Oh, my God. Apologies. You're going to have to cut all this out.
I know.
This is how lost I am. But literally, like, when I looked up... And a picture of Minkowski, I was like, oh, that was the guy building the cabin. But it absolutely was not, now that I have looked at pictures of them.
They don't look similar at all.
They look a little, they have long hair.
They're both balding. Oh, wait, no. Horace has long hair. Isn't Minkowski balding? Anyway, well, it's fine.
He does have long hair, though. Ugh. This is what Lost, there's too many people.
Speaking of getting lost in the shuffle... This season of television was affected by the 2008 writer's strike, which is really funny because I started my rewatch of Lost many years ago, but I got to season four right as the 2023 writer's strike was hitting. But then y'all started watching Lost, so I stopped and started again at season one. We're getting in pedantic. Anyway, whatever. The way Lost was affected by the writer's strike, they had 8 episodes written up until Meet Kevin Johnson. And then they had to go pencils down. And so this is an interview that I have from Wired magazine back in 2008, where they said, according to co-executive producer Edward Kitsis, he basically gave a quote on how the writer's strike was a blessing. Here's the quote. "We got to tell a little bit more story this season than we anticipated. It's working out really well. Everything we're doing right now is exciting, and every script that's going out, you're jealous you didn't write it. The last 2 weeks before the strike, we sat down and said, here's what we want to tell for the rest of the season. We sat down and the entire staff came up with a battle plan in place. As for the three episodes that won't make it to air during the strike, they'll be, quote, made up over the course of the next two seasons." So I don't know if you remember this, but we said that after season three, they made a plan that there will be 16 episodes each. They have three seasons planned, 16 episodes each. Season four was 14, but season five and six make up for that to still have a total of 16 times three episodes left in the remainder of the series. So they still got the episodes they needed out of it. They, according to this quote, feel like the strike helped them. How do y'all feel? Did you feel a little bit confused at all while watching the season, or could you not tell that this was a strike season?
I didn't, but I think that's a big benefit of Mike and I sort of watching this show through at our time frame. I think, honestly, had there been weeks-long breaks in between episodes, I probably would have lost steam, especially in that middle portion where things are not – where the episodes aren't the strongest. Like, I think Eggtown was one of them. And
Eggtown is early. Eggtown is pre-Constant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I understand why you think that, just because it's such a lull. But yeah, Eggtown, yeah. Even Economist. Eggtown, I think, is the worst episode of season four, which is the Kate flashback with the trial. And Jack is asking, yeah, Stan, do you love this woman?
Do you love her? That's a tough one. That's a really tough one. So I actually didn't feel like you could see those wheels turning so much while we were watching the season.
I think for me, right, like every season is going to vary in terms of how good it is, right? Like they're all not going to be the best. Like there's going to be bad seasons of Lost and there's going to be good seasons of Lost. And so like this season probably was middle of the road. I don't think it was like the worst season of Lost yet by any means. And when I say worst, I really mean like least best, because I enjoy all of them. But so it's difficult for me to be like, to clearly define like, oh, this is maybe a little bit lesser because of the writing strike, and not just be like, it's just not as good as season three, for example. That being said, I'm like very curious as to how the whole 16 episode each breakdown changed, right? Because it's like, if it was 16 episodes and but then they went from 14 to more, is it like, was their finale at the end of four, was that always the finale and they just condensed it a little bit and now they're expand, you know?
I wouldn't get too caught up in that. I mean, the story of the finale is it was supposed to be a two-part finale, actually. And the second part of the finale was an 80-page script. And they were like, if one page is 1 minute in Hollywood. So that's an 80-minute script, basically. So they were like, ABC, we can't cut this down. What can you do for us? I think there's two stories that I've heard about what happened. One is that the way the finale aired is There's No Place Like Home Part 1 aired 1 week. And then there was a 2 week break. And then There's No Place Like Home Part 2 and 3 aired. What's really interesting, one of the stories I've heard is they're basically like, this is two parts, we got to split it up. And ABC was like, well, the week after There's No Place Like Home Part 1, we don't have the second hour for you. We've already allotted it for somebody else. So they had to take a 2 week break for that. I find that surprising, like that they didn't just bump it for Lost. But I guess Lost was really weak, yeah, in the ratings at that point in time.
I guess I'm just like curious. I know, not to get caught up, but in terms of like switching around the amount of episodes, is like, did it force them to change the direction of the story, plot in any ways to account for that, right? Because like, for example, you know me, big Lord of the Rings fan, like the cutoff point in the Lord of the Rings books does not exactly align with like with the movies, right? Like where the Fellowship of the Ring ends is not necessarily where it ends in the book. Like Boromir is still alive as we start the Two Towers. So it's like, So it's like, is there weird things like that, right, that change with the plot?
I would say the biggest change, and this is completely like me daydreaming, I have no proof about this, but in the early season four, they have all of these things like, don't trust the captain. Desmond and Saeed get this note that's like, don't trust the captain. And then the captain ends up being a great guy that like helps them get off the freighter.
Oh, yeah. Good point. I honestly forgot about that. Yeah. Oops.
Like that is one of the, that when I watched that and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. That's when I was like, I'm embarrassed that I told Priya and Mike that this was my favorite season, because it felt very like early season four does feel messy, because as somebody who has watched it previously, I'm like, a lot of this does not pay off. I do not know where they're going with this. But then there's like the little things even after the strike, like when Jack is yelling at Kate to tell her where she's been and being super abusive, and he's like, Sawyer decided to stay and I'm the one that saved you. And then you see what happened. It's like Sawyer jumped out of a helicopter to save everyone. So that's just Jack being, you know, abusive, annoying Jack. But there are things that are writer strike suffering, and then there are things that are like them just being weird and subtle and, ooh, what do you think that means? So it's hard to separate.
Yeah, and not things that we haven't seen in other seasons of Lost, to be fair, right? Like these like tiny little discrepancies and like weird talking around things.
To this day.
Yeah.
I want to know what is up with Libby in the
literally,
hospital.
Right? Yeah, we like never, this is an ongoing
we never
thing.
Got closure. We never got closure on Libby being in the mental hospital.
Are you still holding out hope, Mike?
With Hurley. Yes, I am. Okay. She's going to make a comeback just like Jack's dad.
I mean, she was in season four.
Wait, what exactly did you call about Kristen Shepherd, Mike?
Did I say he's still alive? I think I said he's still alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think he's alive?
Is he? I don't know.
I don't know either.
That's.
I don't understand.
The whole
I
Jacob
think
the thing
ghost
is weird.
Thing. Yeah, weird. The Jacob and the ghost thing loses me a little bit. I actually really enjoy the time travel parts of it, but the ghost thing loses me a little. This is also unrelated, but so does Sawyer think that Kate is dead? Because he saw smoke? Because that's sad.
Something I didn't realize until this rewatch is after the island bloops out of existence, they do not go back to the island, right? After that, you're just with the Oceanic Six for the last half hour of the finale, and you have no idea what's going on.
I didn't even realize that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until Down the Hatch pointed it out to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sorry, guys, but the island is gone and the show is over. There's no
You've tried to say this like three times now, and Mike and I aren't buying it.
Sawyer is out of the picture. Sorry.
But I think this kind of goes back to what I said at the beginning, which is that this could have been an effective series finale in a lot of ways to me, maybe because I'm actually not that interested in what happens to them off the island. I don't know. It you know why? Because it's so much doom and gloom. I think bad things are ahead, and I'm worried about that.
Yeah. I mean, to circle back to what we were discussing about, like, introducing certain things early in the season and then there being like no payoff or it not making sense later. I think the way that, and yes, it happens in season four, but like Priya said, it happens in other seasons as well. And I think that's partly due to how batshit crazy of a show Lost is. And that's why they can get away with it, right? Is because like, unless we're like Shruti who's rewatching this, like, there's so much shit that's happening and like even obviously there's big twists, but there's little ones every single episode that it's like it's so easy to forget what happened and what was introduced earlier on in the season, let alone a few episodes ago.
And I think you're willing to forgive a lot of things that don't work if a lot of things are working.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what happens with Lost, is that so many things work both logically and emotionally, which is important, that like every once in a while when something doesn't work, you're like, okay, you know, that's annoying, but it's still worth watching.
And I feel like that is why I have this false memory of season four being my favorite season, because the whole time you are playing this game of, in the first half, who is the Oceanic Six, and the second half, okay, well, they're not together. How are they going to get together and how are they going to get off the island? And so no matter all the crazy shit that's happening that you're like, what the hell? You're still like latched onto this question that they've asked you, and you are playing a game with the showrunners the whole time, and they're messing with you and they're having fun messing with you, and I'm having fun with them having fun messing with me. I am so happy that neither of you were spoiled on the return of Michael Dawson, because Harold Perrineau is in the credits for all 7 episodes that precede his return on season 4 of Lost.
See, and it's good that I don't know anybody's names.
Sorry I spoiled Harold Perrineau's name for you. I remember sitting there the first 7 episodes being like, where the fuck is Harold Perrineau? What's going to happen? And then the fucking thumbnail for episode 8 is his face. I have a lot of beef with all of that, but it's fine. You guys didn't get spoiled on it, so it's fine, but I don't want to get too heated. How did y'all feel about Michael's return?
I unfortunately, as a big previous Michael fan, didn't think that this season 4 storyline worked very well at all. I think when Michael and Walt sailed off into the distance, I fully expected Michael to be back pretty soon to
Yeah, you guys both bet next season.
Yeah, we did. To help the people on the island, to be like, look, these people were my friends. I really screwed them over. Here I am. Let's figure something out. And I apologize. And so this idea of, first of all, maybe don't tell your 10-year-old son that you killed 2 women in cold blood. Like, that's not necessary, I think. And then this story of trying to kill himself, that being what brings him back to the island, and he's actually still doing it to serve Ben in a way, really is not very satisfying for me.
Which, can I just say,
yeah.
I love how that episode brought back our old friend Tom. Oh, Tom Friendly, he's back. He's back, Mike's and he's favorite, gay.
Which, Mike's gaydar was up. He knew he liked Tom from the second he met him.
Secretly knew. Yeah, I mean, I definitely was very surprised to see. Well, I shouldn't say I was surprised, because we did predict it. We did say he would be.
Yeah.
We thought we would see him again. But I think just the way, you know, like, out of the blue, when you see him on the ship for the first time.
Yeah, is a like, lot is like of time had surreal. Passed. I don't think either of us was like still holding out hope that Michael. Yeah, I had
exactly.
forgotten about Michael.
It was like
yeah.
it had left the mind a little bit. And even coincidentally, I like in the finale where we have Walt sitting down with Hurley. I love that too. Walt,
I like really that too.
Grew up.
Yeah, really went through puberty. Sorry.
I really thought
Doctor
I was like.
Shit.
Well, I was trying
it's been
to.
3 years.
I was like, yeah, but like in my mind, I was like, he looks like he aged like 7 years. Yeah. Like, I was like, he was like a 7-year-old kid and I was like 15. Yeah, I mean, I think. I was always torn on Michael in terms of, like, if I liked him or not. And I think, you know, like, this story was somewhat of a redemption arc for, like, what he did. But it, like, just wasn't, like, that, I don't know, it didn't grasp me that much, right? Just
I agree.
Because he's still, like, and I think it's the nature of his character, right, where even when he's like trying to do the right thing, he's still like so combative about it. You know, it's like, and he was forced into it essentially.
Yeah.
Even if he does mean well. So it's like, it's tough in that regard.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, in the end, he does end up saving the lives of a lot of people, I suppose. But it is, his main goal is to kill himself, which is not really a redemptive arc in the sense of like, how do I atone for my sins? Like, I don't like that. I also, not to like keep sitting on this, but it's partially Michael's fault that Jin's dead, right? Like, Michael told Sun that he would get Jin out of there and he doesn't. I don't understand why nobody told Jin to GTFO a little bit sooner.
Well, I will say he told Jin to leave and Jin was like, I stay.
Yeah, Jin was like, I stay. And then they had to like hug and it was like a whole thing. I don't like it at all.
Yeah.
Before we talk about Jin, I just do want to talk about Michael and Harold Perrineau's relationship to the show, because, I mean, as y'all know, in recent Lost history, have we talked about this on the podcast? The Mo Ryan Burn It Down
I don't think so.
Okay. So a book came out this past year, of which before the book came out, a chapter, the book is called Burn It Down. It's by Mo Ryan. It's about how effed Hollywood is. And there's a chapter of the book on Lost and how effed the production of Lost was. And Harold Perrineau has been an outspoken person since Lost came out about how it wasn't, you know, the best portrayal of people of color. He said even in season two of Lost that he had a conversation with Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, the showrunners, about just the black representation in the show. And he mentioned he was very troubled about the fact that in an early version of the season two script, Michael is like not as concerned about getting Walt back. And he said, I don't think I can do that. I can't be another person who doesn't care about missing black boys, even if the context is fiction. This is furthering narrative that nobody cares about black boys, even black fathers. And then after, you know, what happened, he got written off the show. Not written off the show. His character left the show. He was game to come back and came back. And then he gave this quote about coming back. This is also, by the way, from an Entertainment Tonight article. Yeah, ET Online. It's like, what the hell? I came back for that? I was disappointed, mostly because I wanted Michael and Walt to have a happy ending. I was hoping Michael would get it together and actually want to be a father to his kid and try and figure out a way to get back home. If I were writing it, I would have written it differently. And, like, that is my biggest beef with the show and why I, like, genuinely dreaded watching Meet Kevin Johnson on rewatch, because I'm like, I just need to watch this guy repeatedly try and kill himself. Like, what? It is a genuinely baffling decision, and it's really, really sad to me that this is Michael's fate. This is Michael's life story. He has a son that he's then disconnected from, even though he really, really wants to make a connection with him. He finally gets a chance to reunite with him. He's then torn away from him on a mysterious island. They get back together, and the second they get back together, they're once again, Michael is torn apart with him by revealing the secret. He repeatedly tries to kill himself, and then he goes to this island and does this whole mission to eventually kill himself. It's so sad that that is this character's arc. I think it's one of the most tragic storylines in Lost.
Yeah, that's pretty devastating. I think it's pretty sad that the actor felt like it wasn't a good story arc for him either. It sounds like before or after his stint off the show. And yeah, it makes me feel it sort of reads that Mike and I did not really connect to the storyline, that the actor didn't either, and nobody really felt like it was emotionally satisfying.
There were theories at the time, at the end of, right, because Gion ends with the Michael reveal, but then Meet Kevin Johnson, the next episode, is the whole flashback. There are theories at the end of Gion that was old Walt, that there was some weird time travel thing that happened, and the man on the ship that is being played by Harold Perrineau was old Walt. I'm not saying I wish they did that. I'm just saying, on this wild, wacky show, why couldn't you do something to actually let a great actor like Harold Perrineau do his role? I understand if you can't use Walt anymore because puberty is a thing. And oops. But also, time travel exists. Like,
yeah, I think the, like, Walt's too tall thing is weak, honestly. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, too, in Priya touched on, like, why we didn't connect with him, and I said earlier, like, I've always been torn on his character, is because they also don't give us a lot to work with in terms of, like, really rooting for him, right? Like, the last time we saw him, he had just given up all the other Losties so that he could reunite with his son, which was an understandable thing to do. Like, and you saw how torn he was, and he was forced into it, but he had to get his son. So of course, like, he brought Hurley and Jack and Kate to Ben and turned them over. And then we see him sail off into the sunset, right? And then it's like, the very next time we're introduced to Michael, he's like forced into all, even if, like, you cut out, right, all of the devastating stuff about, like, his fractured relationship with Walt and him trying to kill himself, like, even if you just, like, cut straight into him being blackmailed to come back to the island, that's still not the strongest point for us to be jumping off with Michael again. Like, it's just, he's forced into this situation that really isn't providing much.
going back to also something that we said earlier about how Lost does have a tendency to just sweep some plot threads under the rug if it becomes inconvenient to get back to them. I think a big lingering mystery for me still is what the others were doing with Walt when they had him, because he wasn't happy when Michael went to go see him, right? That I thought is one of the saddest scenes also of the show, where Walt is crying and is like, take, you know, I don't want to be here. These people aren't what they seem. And all the other children are presumably happy and having a nice time. And so we still don't know exactly what was going on with Walt there. And I am holding out hope that we find out. But so far it feels like one of those things that they just sort of like put away because it was a little inconvenient with the actors.
Yeah. And we really, right, the two biggest Walt tidbits, I think, to come out of season four is, one, when he resurrects John Locke from the pit when he's shot, you know, and says, we have work to do. That was great.
That's in season three. But
oh,
yeah.
Shit. Okay. So there's that. And then, And then, you know, at the end of this season, when he meets up with Hurley in the institution, and I know Ben told Jack, hey, to get back to the island, you all have to go. And I'm wondering, do we think Walt is in that group that goes back to the island? Because obviously his grandmother is very protective. She ain't going to let him go. But I think
I'm going to
be disappointed, like, if our moments with Walt, considering all of this backstory about how he's like special, are just like these little moments where he's like, oh, I know things.
He made a bird fly into a window.
Did he make the bird fly into the window, or did he just summon the bird by looking at a picture of the bird and then the bird flew into the window?
True.
Also, sometimes, let's be honest, birds just fly into windows. So,
yeah.
Tough one.
Windex. Maybe all of Lost is a Windex ad.
But personally, I think Walt is going to – season five, I think Walt ends up back on the
island. I'm
hoping.
And I'm just really, really upset about Jen. I still don't. It does not stay right with me at all. I think it's a cheap trick that they.
He's dead.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it would be kind. It would be outlandish if he was not dead. And they.
Yeah, no. I think he's dead. I just think it's a cheap trick. Wait,
so, question: at what point? Let me tell you my experience, and then you tell me yours. I watched season four of Lost, and I got to Jian, and I'm like, Jen's not dead. They're gaslighting me. They meaning the Storm podcast, which
such
I love,
such a gut punch. That entire episode, how they play with the flashback and the flash forward, and you don't know they're on two different timelines.
Yeah, that's
until the
devastating.
End.
Oh, surprised.
Yes, I was. Yeah. Yes, I didn't. I didn't think Jin was dead
for that episode. I was convinced he was part of the Oceanic Six.
Yeah, me too.
See. I wasn't convinced he was part of the Oceanic Six. I was suspicious the whole time. I was on edge. And I think that's just a product of 2024 viewing. But even when it ended, I was like, Jen's not dead. Like, he's not dead. We didn't see him die. He's not dead. And then season four finale hit. And I was like, fuck this.
Yeah. And but I think when I filled out the form prior to watching, I'm almost positive. I said I also think Jin is not dead, but like the way they just killed him, like he better be fucking dead, because it'll just be wild if he
I think it feels like a little bit of a cheap story trick. Like they were like, we got to kill someone, it's got to be someone you care about but not one of them big three or whatever. And I just like, with it just feels like the tail end of the Kevin storyline. Like, it doesn't Kevin Johnson, Kevin Michael storyline. Like, it doesn't make sense. Get him out of there. Either jump off the boat. He could have jumped off the boat. I think that's what is just driving.
Well, that's why
me
I'm
nuts
thinking
out.
Like, there's a possibility he could still be alive, because we don't really see it. It's from the helicopter.
Like, maybe he jumped
and he was already on the edge of the boat, essentially. So it's like, okay, he could have jumped.
He should have jumped.
The island is gone now. So, like, he's just going to float around.
The island's
in the middle
gone.
Of the
Where
ocean.
Is he going? Right. Right. I think it would have been emotionally a lot more satisfying if, similar to what Sawyer did, he had chosen to stay on the island for some reason. That's what I was guessing when we see Sun go visit his grave earlier in the season. That's what I was hoping
for. Yeah. Going.
Clearly not.
Leading up to the finale, what I had envisioned in my mind was more so a scenario built around her pregnancy. And, you know, I thought maybe it would be revealed to him that she would die, right, if she stayed on the island in with her pregnancy. And it was, you know, him being so resolute and having to get off the island that he had to stay back, or he made a sacrifice, and it wasn't more so more accidental in nature as his death was in the season four finale, you know, like almost like,
yeah,
almost like
we get a little seed planted of that when he talks to Charlotte about, he's like, make sure you take my wife out of here. And he doesn't say get us both out of here. He says, make sure there's a seat for my wife on that helicopter. So there was like that little seed planted.
Like, I'm envisioning a scene where like she's on the boat.
Yeah.
And like he's back. On the beach,
yeah.
Like watching, like Frodo shipping off the Grey Havens, saying goodbye to the hobbits. That was what I was envisioning, and it just didn't come true.
Beautiful. We could retcon this, I think.
Let's talk about Jeremy Bentham. Mike texted me upon starting the season four finale.
Well, I tried to call you and you didn't answer.
I was watching Dune.
That's fair enough. In the at home or in the theater?
In the theater.
Okay, good, nice.
It's a very long movie.
It's a reissue.
It's a re-release. AMC A-list, baby.
I fucked up so bad, by the way. I rewatched it at home. And then the next day was like when they scheduled the reissue in the Regal app.
Oh.
And I was like,
you should still go.
I was like, should I though?
Go if you can see it in IMAX.
I can
see. Can you see it in IMAX?
No, I think they just took it out of IMAX to put in Madame Web.
Fucking. Okay, well, it'll be back next week.
But so, yes, I called you. So I called Shruti to ask her if I was, because I know I'm not supposed to Google things. I was calling to ask, should I know who Jeremy Bentham is? Because I thought maybe there was a situation where I'd just forgotten who he was and I didn't want to Google it. But like once they start name dropping him, I'm like, who's Jeremy Bentham? I thought for a second it might be the guy who is also, he's like the island recruiter or whatever.
Abaddon. That's who I said.
Yeah, the guy from John Wick.
Is Lance Reddick in John Wick? I haven't seen it.
Yes. Yeah, Lewis Reddick.
Lance.
Do we know his
Reddick.
Name?
Lance Abaddon.
That's his
Lance Reddick
name?
Is the actor.
Who sadly
Abaddon
passed
is the character's name.
This past year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Oh, that is sad.
But do they call him that in the show? Did I'm just not remembering.
They call him Abaddon.
We may know that because of the storm. I don't know if they explicitly call him Abaddon.
No, they call him Abaddon, don't
they? Do they? Okay, I don't know.
I don't know. I thought maybe that
was Jeremy Bentham because he keeps visiting them,
that's,
you know?
That's same. I
so
thought
I'm
that
like,
was him too.
I'm like, oh, so the Oceanic Six know who he is. Maybe that's Jeremy Bentham. I was wrong.
That's a good theory,
obviously,
though.
We know that now.
I dig the theory. I mean, Jeremy Bentham is very much used as just a way to refer to Locke without spoiling that it's Locke. I think that it's a little silly, and I had issue with it at first, but we got an excellent email from a listener named Randy, who's sent to us before, about using the name Jeremy Bentham, which I'm going to read. Before I read this email, I also want to plug Randy's column. Randy's a public school teacher who watches Abbott Elementary, and he wrote an article in The Pop Break about Abbott Elementary. I have yet to read it because I haven't watched the new season yet, but I'm so excited to read it because I'm eager to hear his perspective on the show as a public school teacher. So I encourage you to check out Randy's column. Again, it's on thepopbreak.com. Now to read Randy's email on Jeremy Bentham. Jeremy Bentham was a 19th century British philosopher and a social reformer famous for the modern utilitarianism and developing the concept of, and I'm definitely going to pronounce this wrong, the Panoptian prison. Okay, this is a prison proposed. This was a proposed prison design of a circular prison with a central watchtower that would allow one of a very few moderators to keep an eye on every prisoner. From the prisoner's POV, they would not know for sure if they were being watched or not. The idea is that this kind of surveillance, very big brother, would keep prisoners focused and working hard. Bentham argued that this is a humanitarian reform to cut down the costs and allow prisoners to do something useful. But he seemed to miss the inherently controlling and dehumanizing nature of this structure. This sounds quite a bit like our guy John Locke, who has always believed that he was acting in the best interest of our losties and some grander purpose, even after finding out he was in this same version of a prison of sorts. The Swan was, I censored this because I'm not sure if y'all know the purpose of the Swan yet, but the Swan was a good old experiment, and good old Dharma seized the opportunity to use it as a psychological experiment as well. Remember Locke's face when he finds those notebooks in the Pearl Station of writing down all of these memories, observations. So I'm just curious about what y'all think about this usage of Jeremy Bentham and Locke's quote-unquote delusion or grander purpose. What do you think it is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I knew who Jeremy Bentham was before watching this episode, right? Like, I think a lot of people are familiar with John Locke, the actual person, right? Not the losty. So it's like, if I knew that Jeremy Bentham was also like this renowned philosopher, like, I'd be like, oh, that's probably a little obvious, right? Then, like, if you're taking this character named after like this philosopher and just calling him a different philosopher, like, it's a bit on the nose. That being said, I think, you know, it opens some really interesting possibilities for season five. First of all, how did he get off the island? How do they bring him back, apparently?
How did he die?
His corpse. How did he die? And also, like, is there a different life of Jeremy Bentham? Like, what was Jeremy Bentham like in the real world? Were there certain things that he did that are differentiating from the John Locke character? So it was definitely a surprise. I think I predicted that it would be Locke in the casket, that he was the one that was dead. But even like when they still revealed it, it was like, oh shit, like, it's Locke. Like, it's still surprising at the end of the day.
I think right now, the end of season four, the way that Jack and Kate respond to Jeremy Bentham / John Locke and Randy's email all are kind of putting John Locke really into this antagonist light. Ooh. I think.
I don't think Randy was saying John Locke is an antagonist.
Really? He literally says that it's a big brother type surveillance, visions of grandeur.
I guess I cut out a lot.
Randy, please clarify. Are you implying that John Locke is an antagonistic figure in your email? Because that's what I'm getting from it. I will say it's pretty funny because my partner Jackson has not been watching Lost with me, but he did watch season one and he watched the season four finale, and his general summation was John Locke sucks and kill Ben. Like, those two things have stayed true.
I like both of them.
Okay, Ben allowed his daughter to die, and then Ben is basically to blame for Jin dying because he killed Kimi
fully
setting off the freighter,
and he doesn't care. I think I think very interestingly, I think from the beginning of this podcast, the three of us have had a similar man of science, man of faith back and forth. And I still struggle with John Locke's just deep seated, unshakable belief that he knows exactly what's going on and what to do at all times and knows what's best.
That's what I love. I love the delusion. I love the delusion. That last shot when he stumbles upon their camp, it's like he's like the Messiah. He's up on the hill looking down.
Oh boy.
Well, also we've seen now basically previously on John Locke, right? In that episode in Cabin Fever, where you see him as a baby being visited by Richard. You see him being asked to go to the science camp and he's like, no, I like sports and boxing.
Except with Richard's eyeliner, by the way.
He's not wearing eyeliner. Isn't that crazy?
Those are his eyes. That's
crazy.
You know what? I think what makes a quote-unquote hero likable and a very a common trope in many stories and fantasy stories is the reluctant hero, right? The reluctant leader. And this story, Lost, is filled with not reluctant leaders. And I think that's what makes them off-putting, right? Like, John is a grasping leader. He wants so desperately to have power and be in charge. And Jack is the same way. Jack is a grasping leader.
Well, in season one, he was like, why are people looking at me to lead? I don't want to lead.
Yeah, that's bullshit. They always say that when they really don't believe it.
One of Nathan's favorite moments in the season four finale is Sawyer asking, what are Jack and Locke doing in there? And Hurley going, I don't know, leader stuff.
Leader stuff. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And so I think that's the piece of both of them that is kind of pretty off-putting, and the part that it doesn't allow me to get close to Locke or really feel for Locke. I mean, I feel for Locke, but I think that piece is still pretty off-putting for me.
Yeah. See, what I like about Locke as a viewer, like, mm-hmm. I could never follow him.
Yeah.
But what I like as a viewer is I'm like, I like how his devotion to not knowing what to do, but still being like, he's like, we don't know. The island has to tell us. Or, you know, just like, there's so many instances where he doesn't know the answer and he's still just like riding the wave, so to speak.
But again, like, right, we've now seen previously on Locke, we know that he has been trying to fit into this persona his whole life and he hasn't really figured out who he was. And then he landed on this mysterious island that gave him the ability to walk again. Why would he not then think, I need to answer every single thing this island tells me to do?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think what is difficult to digest is the belief in that unseen, intangible power and source above tangible people that you have in front of you, right? And that's been the struggle since Jesus Christ, I think. I'm not an expert.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't know the answer, but he knows when it's the wrong answer. You know, like Jack wants to do something and he's like, no, we're not doing that. And Jack's like, what should we do, Locke?
But not that.
I don't know, but not that.
And listen, season three finale, he said, these people are here to kill us. And Jack said, shut up, Locke. And guess who was right?
Yeah, but is that so helpful? Them? Like, I don't, right. like, no. I don't, like, yes, but also we're not contributing to any sort of solution. We'll see.
Yeah. But Jack won't change his mind.
Correct.
Jack Wright is the polar Absolutely. Opposite, where, like, Jack sticks with something and he's just like, no, like, this is it. This is what we're doing.
Oh, wait, sorry. We do need to wrap up, but... Medical Dr. Priamarante, how do you feel about Jack Shepard trying to stay awake during his appendectomy?
Oh, I was very, very upset by that. You guys, he doesn't like, you have a lot of visceral pain, nerve fibers. It's also, I'm going to be honest, these people are not living through, I still can't get over spinal surgery. So appendicitis at least is like a relatively simple thing to take out.
Do you agree with Juliet's comment that doctors are the worst patients?
Oh, 100%. That is the most real thing that's been said on this show.
Well, I will leave you to getting into season 5 of Lost. I know y'all can't wait. I will send you a betting series to fill out before you get into that. In the meantime, Mike, do you want to tell folks where they can find more of you on the internet?
Yes. You could follow me on Letterboxd at mRicardi. And yeah, that's it. I'm not going to share my Twitter tonight.
Mike's too mad that Alex died. We didn't even talk about Alex and Russo.
Poor
RIP.
Alex.
And Russo. You guys hated her, but I was sad to
I didn't.
No,
I, didn't
I did
her.
Not hate Russo. Whoa. This is slander of the deepest kind.
I just remember you calling her superfluous and me taking that personally.
In season one, she was a little too mystical in season one, but now she fits right in.
And now she's gone.
It's just about context. Really sad.
R.I.P. Carl. Don't forget about Carl.
R.I.P. Carl's Nalgene.
Brita, where can folks find you?
Really, you can find me mostly on the next episode of COTS discussing Lost, as long as I'm invited back.
And you can find me on Twitter at MicroMarate. You can find me on Letterboxd at Shruti Marate. And then you can follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. We are at Chaos on the Set on all three platforms. If you care to share us an email, we'd love to hear any of your spoilery season 4 thoughts, because we will be, me and my friend James will be breaking down all of our spoiler thoughts on season 4. We'll have an episode coming out soon on Avatar The Last Airbender, the live action series. And we'll have an episode soon after that just breaking down who's going to win all of the Oscars. So if you have any of those thoughts that you'd care to share to us, email them to us at chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com or tweet us, Instagram us, comment on our Letterboxd at chaosonthesetpod.